Hello, this is Dr. Arliss Wood, psychologist, with co-host Dr. Suzanne Wood, speech-language pathologist on our program, Health and Happiness. The Montana Psychological Association Public Education Committee supports this presentation, and we air weekly on Monday evenings at 7 and on Thursday mornings at 9 on KGVM 95.9 FM Bozeman and KGVM.org. Also, KGVM is grateful for the support of the Bozeman Daily Chronicle, Gallatin Valley's newspaper. The Bozeman Daily Chronicle, empowering the community, online at bozemandailychronicle.com and available through subscription, in print or online. More information at bozemandailychronicle.com. We have another great program tonight for you, Gallatin Valley. Dr. Suzanne will introduce, among others, we think, Bob Wall for his radio engineering to air this program. Suzanne.
Did you ever think how much profit businesses must make in order to spend millions on repetitive commercials? They'll make billions, right? We couldn't help but notice the stupendous number of commercials for Medicare Advantage plans. Newsweek reported during the last round, when there was open enrollment time, there were 9,500 daily ads. Why? It's just Medicare, right? Well, we decided to look into it. Are Advantage plans truly helpful? In starting the research through the medical world, here are some of the headlines that I found from JAMA Health Forum, which is the Journal of the American Medical Association. Federal investigators find Medicare Advantage plans too often delay needed care. From Newsweek, January 2024, more than half of seniors stuck in Medicare Advantage plans. From NPR, National Public Radio, and Yellowstone Public Radio, older Americans say they feel trapped in Medicare Advantage plans. One more Newsweek article said seniors are stuck in Medicare Advantage nightmares designed to confuse us. One more from Investopedia, 2023, it describes the pitfalls of Medicare Advantage plans. So this is not just an issue for older folks. Younger generations will be impacted by their parents going under with medical debt and/or not receiving the medical care they need. And then they too will be facing these decisions. This evening and today we have with us Donetta Claiborne, a director of nurses in a healthcare and rehab facility, and Dr. Christina Myers, physician with Community Health Partners. Welcome, Donetta and Christina. Maybe we could just start if you could tell us a little bit about your experience with insurance programs.
Dr. Woods, I can give you a personal example. My mom had kidney cancer, and she was using the East Texas Cancer Clinic in Longview, Texas. And the social worker called, and she was like, "Well, your mom has changed insurance." I was like, "No, she lives with me. I take care of her Medicare and her Medicaid. She hasn't changed insurances." So she looked something up, and she was like, "Yes, she's changed. She's in a Medicare Advantage now." So after I got home off work that day, I talked to my mom. She was like, "Well, yes, and this is how they get the elderly. They tell them, oh, we're social services, and we called to talk to you about your insurance." So she thought she was doing the right thing by talking to, quote-unquote, this social services. So after we talked and we figured out what happened, this Medicare Advantage she had got into wasn't going to pay for her cancer treatments, which was $15,000 a month. Just so happened at that cancer center, there was an excellent social worker who got the chemo drug paid for by the chemo company. And like I said, and I had to tell my mom, no, don't even answer the phone, because these people are scandalous.
That is just wretched and riveting. They just took total advantage of her and misled her the whole time. Oh, my goodness.
Mm. And like I say, and being the director of nurses, I see it daily and with different HMOs and PPOs with the Advantage plans where people aren't ready to go. They come to the SNF to get skilled therapy. The insurance company, after 2 weeks, oh, well, they plateaued, they got to go. Well, they haven't plateaued. They don't need to go home. They're not going to be safe at home. Well, we're not going to pay anymore.
Yeah, that happens over and over. And I know some treatments, like my work in the medical arena, it could take numerous weeks, maybe months, to help a patient get off a feeding tube and be able to eat normally again. And that takes very careful therapy and work on behalf of the facility and the patient. And that, of course, might be another one of those therapies that would be cast aside. Wow.
Right, and it's send paperwork in every week. So we can look at, so the doctor over the insurance company can look at it and see if this patient can stay a little longer.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Myers, Christina, you work for Community Health Partners, and I know that they help people no matter what, but what has been your experience with the Advantage companies for those who do have insurance?
The major challenge that I see for patients on the Advantage plans is the process of prior authorization. So my understanding is these Advantage plans reduce costs. So they sell people saying that their monthly premium is going to be less, but they do that by then restricting services. And so you have to see a provider that's in your provider network for your specific plan. Okay. And certainly in Bozeman, the size of community that we have, it's quite possible that there is not a provider available who's covered under your plan for some specific service that you need. And so then you don't have anywhere to go for the care that you need, as opposed to basic Medicare. You know, if any organization accepts Medicare, you can see them, whether you're on their Advantage plan or not. They don't have those requirements. So someone with Medicare, you know, who's traveling is more likely able to access care wherever they are than you are when you're on the Advantage plan. And then that piece that you mentioned in your introduction, Suzanne, about delaying care, you know, that happens in this requirement for prior authorization. So maybe, you know, you would benefit from physical therapy, or you would benefit from speech therapy, or maybe you need an imaging test to figure out what's going on. And then that prior authorization process really delays your ability to access that care because of, you know, the bureaucracy piece, which I think, Donetta, you've probably experienced a lot of with the paperwork requirements and the, you know, proving that the requested service is actually necessary piece, then delays or maybe denies care. And then you have to go through this appeals process. So it all becomes a very complicated system.
And no knocks on the Suzanne, no knocks on the nursing facilities. I know, I understand they're in the business to make money, but then on the insurance, on this Medicare Advantage side, you got residents that needing to come in, but they got a $10,000 deductible, and the insurance, the nursing home is not going to accept them because they can't afford to pay that $10,000 up front.
Certainly not. I have one example of a lady called Rose Stone ended up in a Medicare Advantage plan, and she was surprised. They didn't tell her. It didn't cover her visits. where she generally got her care, and the only health provider she could see was 25 miles away. She didn't drive, and she didn't have the money to see the doctor, her other doctor. She couldn't drive that far, so she ended up just stopping going to the doctor. And I didn't go to the doctor, she said, because I was going to have to pay out-of-pocket money I didn't have. And so what we've heard and seen and studied about is that a Medicare Advantage plan can be great if you're very healthy and you don't ever need medical care. And you really shouldn't age, you shouldn't have an accident or a fall or get an illness, because that's when the crunch comes. Yes, you're saving money, but the other part they don't tell you much about is that they have copays. And those can add up quickly to much more than you would have paid with a simple Medicare plan. So it's really something people need to study. And like there's a 200-page Medicare publication telling about all this that is so confusing, people with doctoral degrees cannot quite figure out what they mean or which is a good plan. It's almost as if, you know, they're trying to keep it a big secret.
I do feel like that seems almost intentional. Like they're trying to be confusing, so it's harder to understand what would be the right choice, which is really frustrating, especially for our senior citizens who may have some, you know, decline in their capacity and their thinking. It would be a lot simpler if it were simple.
Oh my goodness, yes. From Newsweek, their statement was, the 200-plus page Medicare plan booklet hardly makes these decisions easier. In fact, it seems like the government is in league with the insurance companies to put together information that is absolutely designed to confuse the consumer. What hope does a senior, maybe without a lot of educational experience, have to figure this out? Yeah,
sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, interestingly, in preparation for this topic, I was looking on the internet, you know, just at the Medicare.gov website. And that website actually seems very easy to navigate and is very straightforward, you know, with links that you can click on to answer questions as you're reading through it. And also, I know that my mom would never get on the internet to do such a thing. Mm-hmm. You know, so she would turn to the paper booklet that is super confusing and overwhelming and like a phone book to try and navigate. Whereas their website is really straightforward. It's probably less accessible to the patients who need it, because they wouldn't necessarily turn to the internet to answer those questions and to do this sort of work. And so I think there's a gap in there in sort of the information that they're trying to provide and what actually their clients are wanting to use. What seems more accessible is paper and pencil, and that's not really as user-friendly.
I'm not usually into conspiracy theories, but my thoughts are that in the origination of Medicare, there were the two sides, one that wanted everybody to have health care for the government to be the primary payer of it, and those who wanted to keep things totally private in private medical or insurance kinds of situations, that there was some kind of compromise. And in order to get maybe plans A, B, and D, I think D was put on last, of course, by, as I recall, by the Bush administration. But I think the A, B, and programs, the skilled nursing, the, I guess Part A hospitalization, Part B outpatient, and so forth, that some political compromise was made to allow the private insurers to have a piece of the pie and therefore allow the Part C to progress. That is part of my conspiratorial idea right now, I think.
not too far off base, I'm afraid. One problem about this, too, is that it's really affecting hospitals. It's actually harmful to hospital survival. One Ozarks Community Hospital, 25 beds, said, "We're a system with a proud history of taking all patients, but this is really difficult to continue because they're not paying us. Medicare Advantage plans make up 40% of his reimbursements, but they refuse to pay so many of the bills that he received $4.5 million less for the same treatments, which is roughly what they might generate in revenues each month. So they approximately served 30,000 people and narrowly averted a bankruptcy. And the CEOs of rural nonprofit hospital systems in Arkansas, Colorado, Mississippi, Missouri, South Dakota, and Texas told NBC News that Medicare Advantage plans repeatedly refused to reimburse them for the care they provide. Some 170 of our American rural hospitals are at risk of closing, according to a report for the Center for Healthcare Quality, a nonprofit advocacy organization. So there are some far-reaching impacts of this effort. And when you read about it, they started this program, quote, in 2003 to encourage greater efficiency in healthcare. And just a few people enrolled at first, but back to those commercials we see all day, every day. And now almost half of people have switched over to the Advantage plans.
Dr. Myers, in your work, you might describe it to the audience. There, you have some protections against that, I assume, being a federally qualified agency. Is that correct?
We do. You know, we really have the benefit of the federal grants that we receive as a FQHC to offset the reimbursements that we get, although that was primarily designed to offset the cost of providing care to people who are uninsured. The people with insurance who come to receive care in our clinics, that balance really helps us to provide more services. But if we're not getting reimbursed for the care that we deliver, say because the Medicare Advantage plan says that that care is not reimbursable, then the benefits of those insurance, you know, sort of put us out of balance. We do not deny care to anybody. We take care of everyone regardless of their ability to pay, but our capacity to stay open, you know, is reflected by what we can then receive in reimbursement through both our grants and then our percentage of patients that do have health insurance coverage. So healthcare is suffering in a big way. Nationwide, federally qualified health centers included, because of real changes in the cost and the delivery of care, and also our base grant funding that we receive as a federally qualified health center has not grown to keep pace with those inflationary costs. I think as you research why does healthcare cost so much, a huge percentage of those costs are administrative. And it's like my initial point in talking about prior authorization and denial of services, that creates a tremendous administrative burden of people who are, you know, needing to answer phones and push paper around and say yes and say no. And that gets in the way of doctors providing care for their patients. And we see this with Medicare Advantage plans. We also see this with private insurance, putting up barriers to patient care or deferring costs to high deductible plans, you know, that don't really cover the cost of care until the patient themselves has put a tremendous amount of out-of-pocket investment up front before things get covered. I really think our entire healthcare system needs a dramatic overhaul that includes making for-profit healthcare no longer the forefront of our healthcare system. That profit piece is really hurting the patient.
Absolutely.
Very much so.
Yes. Well, we know that Medicare Advantage plans are sold assiduously by celebrity pitchmen. One is Joe Namath, and there's supposed to be a better way for Americans to get insurance coverage. And they add some little perks that are really kind of meaningless when you look at what they actually provide, like a little bit of dental care, a little bit of visual care, etc. But if the government hoped Medicare Advantage plans would reduce the costs of care, that has not been the outcome. Medicare payments to the plans will total $27 billion more in 2023 than if patients were enrolled in traditional Medicare, the report projected.
That's amazing.
And it's making some people rich. Now we get to the bottom of why do they have these advertisements going on and on. United Health Group, the largest Medicare Advantage provider, with 7.6 million in his plans, had a $257 billion in premium revenues in 2022. Some 13% over the previous year. And a significant driver of that was the Medicare Advantage plans. And Humana, almost 80% of Humana's $51 billion in revenue came from Advantage plans. So what we're doing, we're harming people, holding back on treatment, but we're making a few people really, really happy and well-to-do and rich.
Which is not improving the health of our communities.
Where does Medicaid fit into this? Anybody have some narrative on that?
Well, Medicaid is insurance for low-income people. Only when you become 65 or disabled or have a disabling qualification, you can also qualify for Medicare. But there are many people who are dual eligible. So you have Medicare because of either your age or your disability. And then you can also have Medicaid based on your income level. And that is actually a very tremendous benefit for people because it does offset copay costs, the percentage that you still need to pay as a Medicare participant for your routine care until you meet your deductible. Medicaid can offset that cost, but it's purely based on income restrictions. There is a significant paperwork burden for people to stay on Medicaid. And in Montana, we have seen this over the last year. So there were some protections put in place during the COVID pandemic that didn't allow states to disenroll people from Medicaid. When those protections ended, a lot of people were automatically kicked off of Medicaid because they didn't receive or didn't complete their re-enrollment paperwork to verify their income status. This is another tremendous administrative burden that puts up a barrier for people to access care. People move, their mail doesn't necessarily follow them. They might get their enrollment paperwork to an old address that doesn't ever get forwarded, and then they're automatically kicked off and they lose their insurance. There are ideas of putting, work requirements in for people who obviously are younger than retirement age but receive Medicaid. So you have to verify that you're employed, but that your employer doesn't provide insurance, and you also make less than a certain amount of money. All of these barriers that are sold, you know, to the public as ways of verifying eligibility actually are harmful barriers for our hardworking poor Americans that need health insurance, that need access to care. And by not providing continuous coverage, they lapse in their care, their chronic diseases get worse, and ultimately you end up costing the system more money. It's a really vicious cycle of burden that is put on our most disadvantaged people out there in the community.
Donna,
it's really frustrating.
With a nursing home, I know there are issues with Medicaid. Do you have a perspective on that?
Actually, Dr. Woods, the Medicaid for the nursing home actually hasn't been affected, except for, you know, Texas has a very low pay scale for nursing homes. They're trying to make up for it with QIP money out of the federal government, where you have to do certain, you have to meet certain criterias like no falls with injuries, catheters, your psychotropic drugs have to be down. That's just to name a few, but it's two or three more. I can't think. No loss of decline in ADLs over the last 6 months or something like that.
And like Dr. Myers was saying, people who come in without insurance, among the workers who are the least paid, it's unlikely they're going to have insurance on those jobs. And so there's a whole lot of concern for their health needs there that creates. And these new barriers that were thrown up, thousands were kicked off, weren't they, Dr. Myers?
Yes, unfortunately they were. This has been a huge problem in Montana. And then the state system to re-enroll is unfortunately underfunded and understaffed. And so then there's a backlog of paperwork people have submitted, and it hasn't been processed. Fortunately, our system does do a fair job when it's confirmed that you are eligible for coverage, that they'll backdate and pay your bills, you know, in that period where you didn't have coverage, but you were eligible. But it becomes very frightening for people to see their bills accumulating when they don't have coverage, and then oftentimes we'll stop accessing care out of fear of medical debt. And so our system does do a good job of paying that off for folks if they meet those eligibility requirements. But oftentimes you'll see people stop coming to the doctor, stop accessing care because they have bills accumulating that they don't, you know, that they're fearful of going into credit or debt for. And so they'll stop seeking care. It's a really sad scenario.
Very sad. Unacceptable.
Suzanne and I talked about having an elder care attorney on to speak about the qualifications for Medicaid, for example. I know very little about this, but I do know that there are, I guess I would call it legal manipulations or red tape kinds of exceptions where one can protect, let's say there's a couple, one of them becomes very ill, needs nursing home care, for example, and to pay the tremendous cost per month, which I know ranges from anywhere from $5,000 to $15,000 or $20,000 a month, depends on the nursing home and the state, that it would quickly deplete any wealth that the couple may have accumulated, but by doing certain legal maneuvers, one can protect, I think, the non-institutionalized spouse, and there are some other possessions if one goes about it in the right way and can. But again, that complication shouldn't be out there because very few people know about it. Very few people will hire an elder care attorney. but we're talking about having someone to talk about that. Can anybody illuminate that area at all? Donetta, maybe?
Say it again, Dr. Wood.
I know sometimes when we worked in the nursing homes in Texas that there was someone who would talk to the families to help them protect some of their assets. Yeah.
Yes. I can't even think of the name of the program, and I just went to one about a month ago.
But what they do, they actually help people figure out a way to have a family member in the nursing home environment without totally destroying anything they may have gained over their 50 years
right.
of work.
Without having to give up their home, every dime they've worked for.
Yeah.
As I understand it, each state may have a different system. You mentioned the low reimbursement rate in Texas. Well, from what I hear, it's been pretty low in Montana. Isn't that correct, Dr. Myers?
It is. I think that in general, Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement is less than the private insurers. And those rates also haven't kept up with inflationary costs. So it costs more to provide care, but the reimbursement rates haven't changed to reflect those changes over time.
Imagine a family needing to come up with, let's say, $10,000 a month. And I think that's probably about the median. I may be wrong on that, but I think it's somewhere between $7,000 and $12,000 a month for nursing home care. Donetta, do you know?
No, I don't.
Well, it seems like we need to come up with some ways to consider what could be done about this. We're describing a serious problem. You either of you have a thought about what we could try to do as a group or individuals that might have some impact here?
I do feel it's really important for people to just be as informed as they can about state legislation that's happening around healthcare policy, and then, getting out to vote and express your opinion both on a local and a federal level. I think we've seen that the privatization of healthcare is not in the benefit of the patient.
Right.
And so we have to find some balance between federally serviced healthcare like Medicaid and Medicare and the private sector. But the current system is not benefiting the patient. It, like you mentioned before, is profiting the CEOs that are managing those plans. I don't have an idea for an answer, but I think people getting involved, showing their disapproval with what the current state is, and getting active on a legal level with their legislature is really imperative for change to happen.
All right. And Suzanne, I think we all need to start writing letters to our legislature.
That's a good idea. Mm-hmm. And to all of those listening, why don't we just make a plan to sit down this evening or in the morning and write a letter? This is a significant matter to each of us.
And I think those letters would be to your local state representative as well as
right.
the federal congressmen and women and the state senators, United States senators as well. And I know one thing that is in reference to what we're talking about, for example, until recently, the cost of insulin was just horrendous, apparently, like the cost per month. And there was a person I saw testify, I think, before a committee. He could go to Canada across the border from where he lived and get it for like $15-$30 a month. And it was like, I might be exaggerating this, but like maybe $400 a month or more. That has been changed, as I understand. Is that correct?
Yes, there was legislation that was passed on a federal level capping the monthly cost of insulin for all people. I believe it's $35. It's the maximum that you can pay for your insulin. We pay a significantly higher rate for all pharmaceuticals in the United States. And the pharmaceutical industry says that so that we can maintain our research and development of new drugs. But there is no reason to explain why the same drug in Canada costs, you know, a tenth of the price that it costs in the U.S. It's just not fair to the U.S. consumer to have to be paying for all of the research and development costs. Those can be spread out over the entire receiving world. Medications that have been in a generic way are being discontinued as generics because they're no longer profitable to the company to continue to make the generic.
Ooh, I didn't know that. Mm.
Right. Or the federal government pays for the cost of getting these medications made. And then after they're made, the company that actually had the patent charge you some astronomical fee for the medication.
And they've used that excuse that it's all the research and development that goes into it, but they don't mention that they make unconscionable profits in the billions, those at the top of these corporations and companies.
Absolutely.
Oh, Brandon Selfers, a Medicare broker and founder of the Tampa-based Bridge Insurance, in speaking about Advantage Plan, said, imagine foregoing your original Medicare you paid your entire life into for a gym membership. Sounds ridiculous, but that is over half of seniors in the U.S. who traded their birthright for a privatized plan. Well, we've talked about some solutions. We all need to write letters. We've outlined that there is a problem, and we really thank Dr. Myers and Donetta for helping us understand this. And we had another topic that both of you could help us with. We would love to talk about what happens this fall with inoculations, what vaccinations we need, what we might say to those who are saying it's unhealthy to have vaccinations. And so we'd just love to segue for a few minutes into that part of the discussion.
Well, it is flu season. It is upon us. It's happening. And at Community Health Partners, we are starting this week to offer immunization clinics for both the influenza booster and the COVID booster that are available to all adults and all children 6 months of age and older. Newer vaccines that are also recommended to our older adults is the RSV vaccine. That is a one-time shot. It does not have a seasonal booster. So if people got the RSV vaccine last year, you don't need to get it again. But those are really shown to, if you get the disease, you become less sick. You're less likely to be hospitalized, and you're less likely to die from these viral illnesses that can cause severe disease. People who are up to date on their immunizations will stay healthier.
And what do you have to add to that, Donetta?
Yes, that we're actually starting tomorrow with the nursing home residents, starting with the flu shots and offering the COVID vaccines. We've had not more so the residents themselves, but more so the families here saying that, oh, well, you can give them the flu, but not the COVID. No, I don't think they need that COVID. So it's just been a repeat trying to educate the family to let their loved ones go ahead and get the COVID vaccine.
So that was the misinformation that we heard over the 3 or 4 years dealing with COVID about, oh no, the side effects are worse than the disease and all of the nonsense. Yeah.
Well, I would like to just mention to those in the listening audience that having a COVID shot should not be part of any political discussion. And the American Medical Association did a follow-up study after COVID had happened, that first big time around. And they found that Republicans died 4 times as often as Democrats because they were given information that was not helpful to them. So I would just like to say, I don't believe we should make this at all a political situation. Let's talk to our doctors, our nurses, and let's find out what is the medical information. It's not a political question at all.
Correct.
Absolutely.
And we just got our shots last week, and we feel great. And so we'd like to encourage everybody to look forward to less of COVID if you get it, and maybe not even have it, and less of flu. Maybe it'll be very mild.
And you can get them at the same time in the same arm if you wish.
Yes. Yeah. Better to get it all done with at once.
Yeah.
Well, we've talked about a very serious topic this evening, and we've talked about the denials by Medicare Advantage plans, and that they just won't pay. And also, I just wanted to point out in another article that even when the Medicare Advantage plans pay, they reimburse providers far less than traditional Medicare, rural hospital CEOs and doctors told NBC News. The plans are effectively rationing health care, these providers said. The hospital cited specific cases in which plans take a week to approve care but pay only for a 3-night stay after they've been in the hospital for a week. They also deny coverage after approving it, clawing money back from hospitals and doctors, or contend a provider is out of network when it really isn't. They also deny routine tests and refuse to pay for rehabilitation, saying that patients should go home before their doctors say it's wise. One doctor, Craig Pendergrass at a community hospital, said, any study we order, x-ray, CT scan, MRI, stress test, they're going to deny. Whereas with straight Medicare, we just go ahead and schedule it. And here's the rub, too. He estimated that his staff spends 1/4 of each week trying to persuade the plans not to deny needed tests or treatment. So back on our topic for the night, it seems like it's just gotten such a grip on people, and we go back to the on and on advertisements. What can we do to counter this? Should we come up with our own commercials, Donetta and Dr. Myers?
I wish I had the money that we could make our own commercials, Suzanne.
Why don't we think about how to do that?
I was going to say, you know, we can always do our public service announcements on our public radio stations.
That was just occurring to me. We could make a series of PSAs, and we could send them out over the air to everyone out there listening that they need to be aware and they need to take care. And it's especially helpful for you two as medical professionals to sit with us and talk about this issue and try to help folks out there.
I think one thing that's probably the reason, or one of the reasons, I guess back to conspiracy here, is that the people who are most prone to getting a Medicare Advantage program, first of all, you obviously are probably in retirement age. You probably have some chronic conditions, and they're pinpointing that group to sell this to and making it sound like somehow it's better, cheaper, easier. Because that group of people have, in many cases, less voice, less influence, maybe less informed. I'm not sure of that, but probably most of them are, many of them are, than people who are perhaps younger, healthier, fewer chronic conditions. So they're actually picking on a population that can be unfortunately easier manipulated. But I guess that's not unusual for those people. I mean, I'm a capitalist and a socialist combined, I guess. But making money is fine. But when you make it at the expense of taking advantage of those who are less informed, more frail, more needy, then that's pretty inexcusable, in my opinion.
I agree. And I think the appeal that people see up front, I mean, the name is flashy, Medicare Advantage. It makes you feel like this is something that's going to be better for me. And generally, your monthly premium is lower than what you would be paying for the basic Medicare. But people don't see what the downstream costs or the challenges with accessing care are going to end up costing them. Sorry. And so I think that's a real challenge. You know, we see that dollar sign up front, and that can help sway our decision making. And it's really hard to understand, you know, if you think about over the course of the year when you may have X, Y, or Z costs come up, or knowing that you have diabetes and that you need to go to the doctor every 3 months. You know, if people could look at that and have, you know, a graph or a table that estimates what the cost would be with these chronic conditions versus no chronic conditions, and have that information up front in a real tangible and legible way, then that could help guide decision making. But what we see is, you know, this flashy word advantage, that sounds better. Maybe there's a gym membership included and your upfront monthly cost is less. Well, of course I'm going to choose that. That seems reasonable. But what they don't understand is the backside, you know, the long haul costs, the challenges with accessing care, you know, the denial of care, the not having a provider within 25 miles when you may not be driving, the inability to access specialty care because they're out of your network. You know, that's harder to see when you're making that decision. And then once you choose that Advantage plan, getting out becomes harder. You may not be eligible for the Medigap coverage that you would get if you enrolled when you were first eligible to get on to Medicare. You might have to pay extra to get back into the basic Medicare if you don't do it right in the beginning when you're eligible. And mm-hmm. I think that lack of understanding, you know, really plays into bad decision making in the beginning, and then you pay for it in the end.
Yeah, it's just great. Perfect. As long as you don't need a knee replacement, or
right.
As long as you don't need to go to the hospital with COVID, you're going to be fine. You just want to make sure you take real good care of yourself if you get those plans.
Yes. So get vaccinated.
Yes. Oh, boy. And so when we think of medical care, it's kind of hard. I've read several articles about places where there is medical care for everyone. Like when we were in Australia with a group of college students, we went into a beautiful, bright medical clinic because one of our young men had crushed a finger in the tour bus door, one of the college students. And they took care of him and fixed him all up. And they said, well, you know, with our national insurance here, it won't cost you anything at all. And we were just amazed. It would have been several hundred dollars or more in America. And then when we were in Japan, our daughter tripped and fell and broke her collarbone. I think it cost us $35. And other places where medical care is available, like Canada, my fellow speech-language pathologist from Texas used to go all the way to Canada for her medical treatment because she could get such good care there. And so maybe our letters need to include that we might need to look at a different way to approach medicine altogether.
I think that's true. I think we're at this breaking point where we need to just overhaul the whole system.
As we know, that is a huge legislative and political question. There's just fighting like cats and dogs over that. For example, getting Obamacare was a big issue. And we got to really get together for that fight. That'll be a good one. But I would like to see it happen and for everybody to have the availability of care.
Absolutely.
I think we're going to have to do these PSAs, but it will have a very interesting title. It'll be called Medicaid or Medicare Disadvantage Program, I think.
Yes.
Yes. Well, we really appreciate Donetta Claiborne being with us this evening, and we truly appreciate Dr. Meyer spending yet another evening. You've both had a very busy day, and yet you've come to talk with us about this important issue, and we really want to thank you, and we appreciate what you do on a daily basis as well.
I thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. I always appreciate this.
And we'd like to say to Gallatin Valley listeners, continue to listen to KGVM 95.9 FM Bozeman, and go to kgvm.org. You can listen and re-listen and go over this program as many times as you like as soon as it's put in the list in the archives. And listen to this program on Monday evenings at 7, Thursday mornings at 9, and continue to support the efforts of Gallatin County Community Radio. Thank you again, and good evening and good day.